Welcome to a very special episode of the Scotland Grows Show. I'm N.T. O'Donnell, publisher of Scotland Grows magazine and host of the Scotland Grows Show. In this special episode, I chat to a giant in Scottish horticulture, a man whose career has covered not just gardening, but teaching, advising, writing and broadcasting about all aspects of horticulture, north and south of the border. A man that a nation of Beech Grove fans took to their hearts, as well as taking his timely weekly advice, and a presenter who has won the Royal Television Award for Presenter of the Year. For his services and devotion to horticulture and gardening, he was awarded the Scottish Horticultural Medal in 1982, the MBE in 1996, the Garden Media Guild Lifetime Achievement Award in 2016, topped off with the RHS Victoria Medal of Honour in 2020. I am, of course, meeting the legend that is Jim McCall. Jim and I met at Parkhill Garden Centre in Dyce, Aberdeenshire, where the McGilvery family are preparing to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the centre in 2024. Opened by Gordon and Helen McGilvery in 1974, with only £100 in their pockets, and moving the centre to Dyce in 1984, the third and fourth generation of the family continue to work at Parkhill. The staff at Parkhill Garden Centre couldn't have been more accommodating for my chat with Jim, which was originally scheduled for their bustling coffee shop and restaurant, but due to it being so popular, we were kindly offered the office space for a recording away from the hubbub of the coffee shop, and were still provided with hot tea and coffee. Welcome, Jim, to the Scotland Grows Show. I feel like I'm in the presence of gardening royalty.
I'm inclined to say, oh heavens. To be face-to-face is a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jim. And I know that you are such a font of wisdom, and what you say today, believe me, will go far and wide.
Oh, well, I hope it makes sense. But interestingly enough, you see, this business of being having the knowledge, it starts to fade with time. I will warn you, my dear. It fades with time and you get stuck. And sometimes it's quite embarrassing.
But I'm sure you've forgotten more than most of us know.
No comment.
So you've had a beautifully long and varied career in horticulture.
I started gardening when I was about five, I think, with my granddad.
So you were out there sowing seed, you were out on the allotment, you've got a big family history, haven't you, with gardening?
Well, some people do go along that line, and I'm inclined to follow up by saying our family, and my father's side of the family, there's a farmer, there's a nurseryman, there's a forester, and my dad was a gardener all these days. But my mother's side of the family, they were quite different. My grandfather and my mother's side was an engine driver, who in the early days, of course, was fascinating, and I got to even stand on the footplate of a steam engine, you know. But he had an allotment, and there again, there was a time spent with grandfather at Hamilton. What I never ever had the guts to say to father was the reason I liked going to the allotment was that the guy in the next allotment kept pigeons. And as a wee boy, I used to be able to go in and see the pigeons, and I wasn't. But I probably sowed my first seeds out there at Barleith, the blocks. But no, father, he was in parks all his days. He finished up, retired. He was superintendent of parks in Helensburgh, and he absolutely loved the move away from Ayrshire, lovely, to Helensburgh, because there were so many fabulous gardens within walking distance. I mean, he had a delightful time, and they appreciated what he did. That was the other good thing about it.
So gardening was really in your genes?
Well, yes, there was no question. It's certainly outdoors, and did all the right things. So we went to college in Auchincroove, did a course there, And of course, I had to do some training before that. And there were two nurseries in Kilmarnock. One was a rose nursery. One was a general vegetables, fruit and stuff. And the rose nursery I did on school holidays, budding roses, or at least I did the tying bits. That was at Samson's. And then I went to Yule's when I left school. Yule's nursery, I suppose it'll be built over by now. Mm-hmm. But it was run by two brothers. And that was production at its best. Glass houses, tomatoes, cucumbers, etc. Outdoor crops, soft fruit, etc. So it was a great training. Then went to Auchincroft, West of Scotland College.
You were interested in that outdoor pursuit from a very early age. And I think it's really important to get children interested in the outdoors and growing produce from an early age.
The strange thing is it just happened. It wasn't a plan set out, you know. I mean, obviously, you plan it a bit later when you're your own boss. That's when it began to get really interesting. And I went south. The fact is that there was an awful lot of information coming from the south and a lot of activity in the south. And I thought, well, I better go and see what it's all about. You know, in other words, I didn't think that the same situation pertained in Scotland. You see, I had to go south. But of course, it's climate and so I spent some time in Reading. My first trip was to Reading University. Shinfield Grange is an estate on the outskirts of Reading. And they do research work there and decorative borders and stuff for students. Worked there for a time or two. Then I went to Shropshire. And who should be park superintendent in Shropshire at that time in Shrewsbury? None other than Mr. Percy Throper.
Oh.
So it was before that. He was just beginning to get, you know, go. Mm-hmm. I can't say I had any dealings with him at that time at all, but Shropshire and the area was good. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, and we still do it yet, but not so much, the number of fine gardens that you were able to get within a day's trip there and back. I mean, we used to go up the Welsh coast to the gardens there and around the area. It was superb. Then East Midlands, based in Leicester, but working for Minnebag at that time, doing advisory work and a bit of research, a bit of experimenting and so on. And in the meantime, got married, two children. Our number one child was getting towards school age. And there we were sitting one night in our little house in Leicester. And I said, I think our children should be educated in Scotland. Woof, Aberdeen. So Doogie started school in Kemney.
Mm-hmm. And why Aberdeen? Because your family was from Ayrshire.
Well, yes, it was. But basically, anywhere in Scotland would have done.
Anywhere they wanted you.
No, anywhere there was an interesting horticultural job. And there was an assistant advisor's job at the college at Craveston, based, well, in Aberdeen offices, but work was at Craveston. And that was when I into a bit of trials work, you know, trial varieties that would be suitable for the area, etc., as well as far out as Orkney and Shetland came into my sort of. There was an advisor in Inverness, Jim Sutherland, and Jack Verage was in Elgin, and then myself in Aberdeen. But because of the flights were from Aberdeen, I did Orkney and Shetland as well. Yeah. And that was a real eye-opener. Because you're beginning to see very significant differences in the weather patterns, but some cracking gardeners and some really super stuff growing. And then you would find a niche somewhere in I can remember one garden in Orkney, and it was in a bit of a valley, and it was full of stuff, beautiful stuff. Seasons are different, but nonetheless, if you got the right plants for the right place,
yeah.
You know, and you're sort of taking all that in as you go along, and so that's the story in a nutshell, really. So I was able to talk about what it was like in the south because I'd worked in the south, visited a lot of the research stations in the south, fruit stations, and so on, and then back up to Scotland. And have enjoyed Aberdeenshire ever since. It's superb.
Yeah. So what advice would you offer then to those today looking to enter a career in horticulture, whether that's straight from school or whether that's as a career changer?
Don't be afraid to travel from your own doorstep, because there is so much out there. And it's an industry, I find, that, you know, it's not secretive or anything. People are happy to tell you, oh, you'll never get away with that here. Oh, you didn't definitely, no, that's the wrong variety for this place. We've tried it.
Yeah.
And they're willing to say, we've tried it, brave enough to say we tried it. And in that, you get this idea, well, they failed. Mm-hmm. But they're in front of you with some splendid crops. And, you know, it wasn't their problem. It was the overcoming the limitations of the weather and yeah. So on. So and some wonderful nurseries around the countryside, they're just making great jobs.
Do you think there are more opportunities out there now for those entering into horticulture than when you started?
Well, it's difficult to say. I think people are more inclined to move around if it's necessary. But I mean, the weather hasn't changed. It hasn't changed that much in 30, 40 years.
So if you were now starting all over again,
mm-hmm.
what would excite you now about going into horticulture?
Ooh, that's quite a difficult one.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's covered so widely nowadays on television and so on, people can see what is possible without having to try it and fail.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Having said that, every now and again, you get somebody who says, you know, I've got a such and such a plant and it's not doing very well. And I'll say, well, where are we talking about? And you find out that it's a plant that needs an acid soil, blah, 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 whatever. But being such a small country and surrounded by the variations of what people can grow and do grow in Scotland is fantastic. And that's what sort of G's you on, you know, gets you going. What's new? What's next? No, it's been great. Absolutely superb. But as the memory starts to fade and the recall starts, now, where was it I saw that last? Blah, blah, blah. You think, well, time to take a back seat. Oh, the fact is, of course, that chums still come along or their grandsons come along and say, what did you do with such and such? When can you do it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But the other point, of course, is that horticulture, like so many other sciences, has moved on. I mean, the number of new varieties and varieties for specific places or whatever. You see some of the photographs, some of the film on the telly at the moment of, you know, glass houses and so on. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Reading for our climates as well.
And what is encouraging, in fact, is the number of very talented young people that are attracted to the industry. And, I mean, they're doing super jobs. That's quite encouraging, really. We oldies can sort of sit back and just enjoy it.
And think the profession's in safe hands.
But I would never have any qualms about suggesting somebody if they thought about it, mm-hmm. what route to take. I mean, my route was individualist, I suppose, in a way, but I needed to know more from a wider climate.
Yeah, and that travel informs.
Hence the time spent in the south, I mean, in three different places, Northamptonshire, Leicestershire, Shropshire. And that, I mean, you're taking it all in and you're not learning it as it was from a book. And so at page 26, it'll tell you, so you've actually seen it. And you know, to walk onto a field outside Northamptonshire, which was about 15 to 20 acres, and it was nothing but Brussels sprouts.
Oh, nice. I love a wee Brussels sprout. That would be a dream field.
Walk up and down a field. And then the guy said, well, I'm bringing you here because I want to know what's that. And there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. So there's a place where maybe you're able to say, well, I don't know, it's got
Yeah, it was a place for the knowledge that you've learned.
That's what we're there for. And the number of people, the real gems that you meet, and some the pals for life sort of thing.
Yeah.
No, it's I can't say I'm disappointed at all. Nothing I failed to achieve that I'm really upset about.
Well, that's a great legacy, isn't it? To look back.
Exactly.
Yeah. And one of, I think, the projects that you were involved in that people may not know quite as well, because you're obviously well known for being on Beechgrove, but when you moved back to Aberdeenshire in the 70s, you were involved in a project that then was so far ahead of its time.
Yes.
That it was featured on
Yes.
Tomorrow's World, for those who remember Tomorrow's
we
World.
We were in the British Pavilion in America at a World Fair. Went out there, and this was basically the use of waste energy to heat glass houses with three different styles of glass. We started off with a half-acre polytunnel, but the directors had to be sure that we were going down the right road, because the production director, Alistair Ross, he was dead keen, you see, but some of his colleagues were a wee bit, you know, ever so slightly. But when they came out to see, you know, tomato plants 15 metres long, you know, being layered and so on, and a sea of green tomatoes, you know. And of course, because they were local, they were a good marketing project as well. Here, people were locally grown. You know, they didn't come from Guernsey or Jersey or wherever.
So you used the waste energy from cooling the whiskey to then heat the glass houses to grow the tomatoes.
Yes, yes. We had a big polytunnel, a half acre polytunnel. Then we built an acre block, a quarter acre of Venlo house, a smaller house, and then a big acre block of glass. That was a full 30-foot span type thing. And then the small one, which was a kind of a bit of a propagating, we also, when the propagating season was over, we tried out pot plants. We did lots of different kinds of pot plants. And there was a ready market for them, and there are wholesalers, and occasionally we would get retail orders, but we didn't press that at all. But it was a valuable exercise, and it was worth the expenditure and so on.
Well, at its height, that project was delivering 200 tons of tomatoes.
Yes.
Heated by waste energy. Now, 50 years later, we would see that project as groundbreakingly innovative and being very sustainable. But you were working on that in the early 70s.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. I happened to meet the production director of Morrison Beaumont Distillers, and we talked it over, and he was definitely a guy who said, let's go, let's not talk about it, let's have a go, what do we do? And I was working at the college at the time, and I left the college to oversee the job, and it was a case of, and as I say, we started off with the polytunnel, and my present garden looks over the bit.
Oh, nice.
Where the polytunnel was.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's people all stand in the garden that have never been before, and they look over the hedge down there, and it is on a lower level. There's a concrete road, and it's about 3 metres wide. And that ran the full length of that glass house. And when they did away with all of that, they just left that bit of road, and it is a reminder. You know,
yeah.
And the big annoying thing, of course, is that right along the edge of this, so you've got the glass house down there, a polytunnel actually, prone to damage from the wind. Mm-hmm. Then there's a little slope, and there's a line of young trees at the top. And I said, we'll leave these because they'll give us a lot of shelter from the east winds. Now I could see them far enough because my garden's on the other side. And they're a flaming menace because they're too big.
So if you were able now, you'd be out in the middle of the night?
I wouldn't mind taking every other one out. I'll have the guts to say it to the
manager. We could get George to sneak up, you know, he's known to like a wee prune then again.
Yes, indeed. That's just the way things are.
Well, that was a great project to be involved in. And yes, people are almost reinventing the wheel now and thinking, how can we have these sustainable projects? Well, we had them before.
Yes. We did a big display. Now, what was it? It was a garden festival. And in fact, the distillery company built a model of the distillery. It attracted a lot of attention wherever we were. That was the Glasgow Garden Festival. Mm-hmm. We had a huge setup there. And as I say, we went to Kentucky? We did a huge thing there. So it must have been good, because the directors right to the top of the tree happily backed the thing all the way along the line, because it was such a novel.
Yeah,
a novel.
Very innovative.
And it was great to be part of it. Taught me more about whiskey than I knew about tomatoes.
Well, that's no bad thing as a side project.
That's the way of it. But you never know how these things are going to turn out. So,
yeah, I don't always say yes to opportunities, and you just don't know what will come of it.
Yes, I think that's the important thing. It's to have the confidence that you've got the knowledge, mm-hmm. that you could do this. You know, they're going to spend several tens of thousand pounds building an acre block of glass. Production director is backing you. He thinks you can do it. And I think I can do it.
So you better deliver.
Go.
And then you said yes to another big opportunity, and probably what you're most well known for.
Beach School.
Of course, appearing right from the very beginning, from the 14th of April 1978, when the first episode of the Beechgrove Garden went live.
Well done, you. I was looking for that date.
Yeah.
You
know? With George Barron.
Yes.
So when you look back now, you must feel immensely proud, you know, just of what has become an iconic Scottish gardening programme.
Yes, yes. No, to be in there at stage one, at all the discussion, and I think it's easy for me to say so, of course, but I think the combination of George and myself, I had been in teaching, I had been in commercial work, and George had been in the private garden, the estate garden, and so on, at Pitmedden in particular, was where he was when I met him, and he was just a gem. It was absolute gem. And I'll tell you a funny story about George. It's a nice funny story. We'd been working away one day, several weeks into the whole thing. And he says to me one day, he says, "Do you think we'll ever get finished at 4:30? I said, "George, you know what? You've got to go with these guys. Say, well, we'll just do that bit again. Or can we do it from another angle? And that means another half an hour or so on." So I says, "Why?" Well, he says, "My eye has my tea in the table at 5:00. His dear wife, Mima, she was a wonderful cook. Oh, she was superb. And he loved his chuck. And what was the other thing? He was naive, but it was in a nice sort of way. He's just never been in that situation before. So he wasn't quite sure how to handle it. And because he'd always been, you know, head guard, et cetera, there always had been somebody up there dictating. But he was suddenly free. He could decide whether he was going to do it or not going to do it. He could make whether he was available or if he was not available. And we lived in Camney at the time, and he lived, of course, over at Pitmedden. And we then started to get invited out to an open day at a garden in Fife or somewhere, you see. And he would come across to me, and we'd get into the car, and we'd get about as far as Castle Fraser, which is a mile and a half from the house, and he said, "What do you think we'll mark out at the day?" he would say, "Fine, Mama, we get him." So it was just wonderfully naive, but he was as genuine as the day is long.
And the combination of both of your on-screen chemistry and your knowledge, I mean, it cemented Beechgrove in the hearts and minds of the whole nation.
It was superb. And, of course, we got all over the place. And he was a guy whom you immediately took to. He was such a delight. And he used to live in, when he started in gardening, he used to live in Pitmedden, but he worked at Money Musk and he biked it. Number of times we went over this story about biking it to Money Musk and back to Pitmedden. and all the rest of it. Oh, he was a delight, absolute delight. And you learn as well techniques that oh, well, I wouldn't be sure to do it that way. You can. I had to overcome the problem of learning the language. Aberdeenshire is spoken by the native is interesting. It's lovely. And I'd been all over the place.
But wasn't it lovely that that accent and that dialect was then put on screen for people?
Yes.
And it wasn't, yes. You didn't have to have a BBC accent.
No, that you're absolutely right. And people would rather listen than say, oh, I can't be bothered with that.
And they were listening to two genuine gardeners having the banter, but obviously giving great advice.
No, it was a great mix. It was a great, purely out of the blue. You know, I think I'd maybe done some radio stuff. I did one because Grahamston, we did trials of varieties of different things as well. I think I did maybe a couple of programs for the farming television on the trials at Grahamston, that sort of stuff. And somebody heard you and said, well, I can understand what he's saying. Give him another shot here. Whatever. The rest is history, as they say.
Well, you have the accolade of being the longest-serving presenter, and I doubt anyone's going to beat you, are they?
Oh, I don't know. Oh. I think Ms. Baxter will be longer now because she we employed her as the assistant, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah, and then she was the first female gardening presenter ever.
Well, George retired or whatever. I can't remember just how it happened, and then. And by this time, Carl, of course, was the gardener behind the scenes, sort of thing, the full-time sort of gardener behind the scenes. And I will take the honour of saying, I said to the production, give the lassie a chance. Enough said. Enough said. I see her every now and again for a cup of coffee.
And you and Carol were wonderful together on screen.
Well, it worked. I mean, again, that was the balance changed again from George having a lifetime of private service, and I had been in research and teaching and blah, blah, blah. So it worked because we kind of filled in spaces, so to speak, between us to cover its situations. And then I became the old still when Miss Baxter came on the scene from the south of England. You know, that was another...
Yes, element. She brought something different.
That's another element to female. And the fact of the matter is that horticulture always has been a very, very strongly supported by the female of the species. I mean, my mentor at Auchin Crewe, Margaret Wilson, was superb. Mm-hmm. She was an experimental assistant, and then she became an assistant lecturer or something. And Margaret, she left the West College site and went out to be the advisor in Lanarkshire, which was a big glasshouse area. And she was very highly thought of. Margaret was a great help to me in the early days. I was scrambling about. So I was lucky in that respect. So, you think about George Anderson, I mean, he's had a fantastic career as well. Mm-hmm. My regret is I don't see them as often as we used to meet regularly, you know, but... that's one of the regrets that you drop out of the scene and then you just hear it, or you get an occasional card from them or something like that, you know.
But it's hard to keep up with everything as well.
That's it. And you stop going to big events and things. Got to be a bit more circumspect, you know. So
you're no longer on our screens on Beech Grove giving us gardening advice every single week. But what would be the best pieces of gardening advice you would give to people now if they were new gardeners or if they hadn't started gardening but they wanted to start gardening?
Listen to other people. Have a look over the dike and see what the guy next door does, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Get to know and listen to what they're saying. And young people, maybe their parents or their uncles or aunties or whatever, were regular gardeners, keep your eye open. And what's that old saying about every day's a school day?
I think you were quite famed for using that a lot, that saying, weren't you, Jim?
Well, because if you think about it, I was born in Kilmarnock I went to college in Glasgow in Ayr. I worked in nurseries in Kilmarnock, and then I went to Reading. And then I went from Reading to Shropshire, incidentally met Percy. He was a delightful man, by the way. The very first ever flower show at Baschurch. I can remember just like that. I can remember it. Mm-hmm. I was drawn to judge flowers.
Right.
Pot plants with Percy, who had started, you know, he may have been, because he was the park superintendent in Shrewsbury. And funnily enough, his oldest daughter, Margaret, became one of our rural studies teachers at Ludlow when I was in the education department. So I never met him much at all, because he, by that time, he was flying. But you meet these people, you learn from them, you know. So, and then it was, as I say, Shropshire. And the head gardener at this was a garden for students, practical. Mm-hmm. He was a fly old beggar. he was an oldest sort of chap, and he was frightfully well spoken, frightfully well brought up, but just a working class, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong. And he had an old car and a trailer. I never saw so much stuff going care to do to that place. And you know, you'd have thought the sun shone out of it. he was something else, and I was his assistant. We had about three others as well. That was Shrewsbury. That was Reading at university. Then Shrewsbury. Then Leicester. And then, Nuff, we're going home.
Mm-hmm. Aberdeenshire.
My wife was a midwife. She was at Ayrshire Central. She was, that's when we started courting. I was working at Auchin Crew. And we got invited to nurses' dances at Ayrshire Central.
And the rest of it, we'll say no more. The rest is history. So what is your own garden like now, Jim? So away from the screens, what's your own garden?
Well, if I thought it was in a reasonable nick, I would have said, why don't you just come out to the garden? I'm struggling at the moment getting the balance right, mm-hmm. because I can't do as much as I should. Even the glass houses, I'm trying to get it emptied so that I can sterilize it completely and get going again. That's a lean-to glass house on the back of the garage. It's about, slightly less than a quarter of an acre, but mainly trees and shrubs. And some of the trees and shrubs are getting rather large. And so these young lads, the two young lads that come, they do all the clearing up and everything. And this spring, I'm going to have to spend a bit of time with them and start thinning things out a bit.
Yeah.
But physically, I can't. I'd be frightened to go down on my knees.
Yeah, but they're working under your direction.
I can't be sure that I will get back up. that's the stage I've reached.
Well, you're not alone there.
There we go.
But you've got some help in the garden, and they're working under your direction, and they'll be learning loads from you.
Yes. I mean, I've left them alone to do certain things, and then go back and say, well, do you want me to criticise or otherwise? But I mean, it's about, I can help you, but you're helping me a huge amount with the physical side of it. You know?
I think they'll be enjoying the learning process. Yes. Take that with them.
Yeah, yeah.
So to finish off, Jim, I'm not going to ask you to pick your favourite plants, because that would be very unfair. Most gardeners have favourite plants in different seasons. So we're going to play a kind of desert island discs with plants.
All right.
So if you could only have three plants in your garden, I'm going to ask you what they would be and why. So just three plants. Okay. I mean, what a hard question.
Well, you see, if I give you just one name, it could actually lead you to several plants. For example, my ideal garden tree is rowan.
I knew you were going to say that.
Sorbus. But then if I say sorbus, there's that one and that one and that one and that one. So it gives you a wide choice. Without a doubt, it doesn't overdo it. It doesn't get too big over a very long period of time. You've got fruit, you've got lovely leaves, you've got autumn colour, and some of them is better. So the rowan is definitely numero uno as far as trees are concerned. And then I think, oh, dearie me, something is ground covering, but is rhododendron of some sort, but something that is of interest and is a space all the year round.
Yeah, it's evergreen. It fills the space, gives you flowers.
Yeah, and well, and flowers, yes. And then I think, I mean, glasshouse. I'm going to be naughty and say a nice mixture of things. I mean, in the glasshouse at the moment, I've got overwintering houseplants, which get cut back, cuttings taken from them, and they may go on to be bigger plants, or they may finish up getting thrown out whilst the young cuttings. So geraniums, pelargoniums, full stop.
Well, that wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. I thought you would struggle to pick three.
No. I mean, I could go back and pick an entirely different tree sort of thing, you know.
But so if I ask you the same question in 5 minutes, you could pick a different tree.
I mean, conifers, I quite like conifers. I've got several nice conifers at home. Because again, you pop them in and give them a wee bit of space and they make their own shape in their own time. And they're a feature, like a statue.
And yet conifers scare a lot of gardeners because of the heights to which
it's
they can...
because they don't pick the right ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got three in the front garden in this house. When we moved down from the Biggie down, that would have been 12 years ago, 10 years ago. And none of the three are more than 10 feet high, you know, because they are
dwarfing varieties.
That's it. Do your homework. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've got a bit of space, or you've got a space in the garden there, and the woman or the man in the house up there keeps watching you, I'll sort him out. You want something just to fill that space.
Well, that's why I've got four giant ones to block out guy next door.
For the same reason.
For the reason that most people want to get rid of them. That's why I've got them.
I think proportion is, when you buy a young rowan tree, it's not the height of yourself, maybe, and so on, but realise that it's going to be three times your height when it's finished. Not 23 times your height. You know what I mean?
It's something appropriate.
So you've got to know your plants, that sort of thing. People who plant things in the wrong place. That's what I suppose the biggest single problem that I have. Then they suddenly realise, oh blimey, that's going to take over. And then you think all the years you've nurtured it, and you think, well, I don't want to spoil it. Whack it down or whatever. But the ones that I have a battle with in my inner self are sycamores. Which in itself, mm-hmm. out in the open, fantastic. But they're right along my back face, and I should have pulled them out when they were chickens. So there we go.
Is there a plant that you have never been able to grow successfully that you wish you could?
Oh, I've gone past that stage in a sense. I might have thought that way some time back. I can't think. There are some sweeties that are difficult to grow, some of the evergreens, but I can't readily bring one to mind, to be honest with you.
And is there then a plant or a shrub or a tree or whatever that you would never have in your own garden?
Well, that's six sycamores.
Oh, apart from that, yeah, we talked about sycamores. But you've kind of got them by default, even though you didn't want them.
I let them live when they were wee, little realizing that they were going to be my garden in the future was going to be right behind them.
You nurtured these monsters.
I did, because I was thinking about my polytunnel.
Yeah.
A bit of shelter, you know. They are not, they're deciduous, obviously, but they do create a baffle, so to speak, for the polytunnel, which is no longer there.
Oh well, so, that's literally every day is a school day. Back to that, isn't it, Jim? Had you known that at the time,
well,
that's where you were going to build your house, and that would have blocked your view. You wouldn't have put them in.
That's the way of it.
Well, that has been a fantastic chat, Jim, and thank you so much for your time and for all of your words of wisdom.
Well, it's just it is a blether.
I really appreciate you coming out today and having a chat in the wonders of this lovely Park Hill Gardens.
Well, incidentally, Gordon, who started this, laid out my lawns and things way back. I've known him for all that length of time before he ever started this up. So I tend to come here most of the time. You can tell by the way
they know
chat away there. Yeah,
they know you.
Well, on behalf of Jim and I, all that's left to do is to wish you a very happy Christmas and a bright and healthy new gardening year ahead. After our chat, I couldn't help have a wander around Park Hill Garden Centre to see the impressive amount of gorgeous winter plants in stock, as well as every manner of accessory you could need for the garden. Open 7 days a week, located 2 miles from Dyce, Park Hill has won a Scottish Enterprise Award for the best family-run garden centre. And in 2021, they opened at a second location, 30 miles along the road at Turriff, bringing Park Hill to White Lodge. Well worth a visit. It is always a good idea to support local businesses. And I'd like to thank the staff at Park Hill for accommodating Jim and I and for their kind sponsorship of this episode. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram or LinkedIn, and sign up for our mailing list so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows show. And if you're not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows magazine 6 times a year straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for this episode. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we continue to celebrate Scottish gardening.